I'd like to again express my sincere appreciation for the invitation of the elders and the congregation here to come and be with you. I've enjoyed all of the opportunities that I've had to speak to you, and it's always a pleasure to be with the congregation here at Knollwood. And certainly I appreciate all of you who have made kind comments about the newspaper article, and I hope we all benefit in this community from those articles. We see a lot of results at Kettering, and I'm hopeful that the church as a whole is being benefited by that in this area. And certainly I appreciate the fact that you read that, and I appreciate the opportunity I have to speak to you tonight. In thinking about a lesson that we could discuss with you tonight, I thought that, you know, I believe we need to constantly be reminded of what a wonderful privilege it is to be a child of God. And a lot of times I think we take that for granted in this country. But, you know, we know if we look at the Bible that God, since the beginning of time, has showed special care and concern for those that are His children. But I want to begin this evening by asking you a question. Do you believe that God has a plan for you in your life? And what we're going to be talking about tonight is the providence of God. Now, many people have a misunderstanding of the concept of providence, but I want you to think about that tonight and to think about that question. I sincerely believe that God does have a plan for each and every one of us, and that He will use us in His kingdom if we're willing to be used. But tonight we want to talk about what I need to do and what my attitudes need to be in order for God to use me. And we want to discuss this concept here. Oops, went the wrong way here. Of what providence is here. Now, I believe this is the best definition. Providence means the foresight and forethought which enables an infinite God to create a universe that He can control by His law. Now, I think we all agree with that. Do you believe that God is all-powerful, that He's omnipotent, that He's omniscient or all-knowing, that He's omnipresent, and that He has all power, and that not only did He create this universe, but that He still has control of it? I think most of us would agree with that concept. But what has God done? Not only has He created the universe and made it a place where His laws control the things in this universe, but what has He done? He created you and I in His image and His likeness, but He has given man the freedom to act as he chooses. We call that free moral agency, that we're free to choose to live our life as we please. Now the question tonight is, how does God interact in our lives? What does God do for those that are His children? Is there a plan for you? And can He and will He take care of us? I believe that God is able to overrule in that universe and still achieve His purpose. Now, what does that mean? I believe that whether we do good or whether we do evil, that God can use that to accomplish His purpose. Now, what we want to do is look at some passages that prove that. Isaiah 40:31 is an Old Testament passage here. It says, "Those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles, they shall run and not be weary, they shall walk and not faint." Now what does that mean? Does God help those that are His children? Has there been a time when God has forsaken His children? What this is saying, the wings of an eagle is the analogy here, that there is no obstacle I can't overcome. There's no mountain I can't climb. Eagle flies higher than any other bird known to man. And so the concept is that if I'm willing to wait on God to work out His plan, then He will give me renewed strength. He will give me the ability to overcome the trials and the temptations of this life. I can run and not be weary. I can walk and not faint. In other words, I can live a life that is well-pleasing and acceptable to God in this life, and I can make it to heaven with God's help. Now, is it going to be a miracle? No miracles today. But God still works in our lives. And we're promised that in the New Testament. Passage you're probably very familiar with. Romans 8:28 says what? We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God and those who are called according to His purpose. Now, how much is all things? What is there, or what area is there that God's not going to help His children? But what's the qualifier? I've got to love God, and I've got to strive to live according to His plan or His purpose. Now, when I say to God, I want to serve You, Lord, use me as You will, do you think He will? Do you think He has a plan for you? Another passage, Ephesians 3:20, talking about God again, who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us. No passage in the Bible has more superlatives. What does it say? What's God able to do? God is able to do what? He's able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that I ever ask Him to do or that I ever think possible. Now, do you believe that? But what does He say? There is a qualifier. It's not going to be a miracle, but how's He going to do it? He's going to do it through natural means. It's the power that works in us. We've got to be the agency that's going to accomplish that. So what I want us to see tonight is how does God work in the lives of His children to accomplish good in our lives. Now, is there anyone that doesn't have any temptations in their life? You have any trials in your life? Ever depressed? Ever have any disappointments? We all do. Okay, but what do we promise from God? He said, no temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man, and God is faithful who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Now this is one of the most wonderful promises we have in the Bible. He made three promises. He said, number one, every temptation that I face is common to man. Satan can't come up with some new, strange, exotic temptation that no one's ever faced before. What's it going to be? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. I'm going to face the same temptations that everyone else has faced, and it will be something I'm able to bear. Now, why is that important? That means when I give in to the temptation, it's not God's fault. It's not my mother's fault. Whose fault is it? It's mine because I didn't stand up and do what I should have done. And then He says there will always be a way of escape. So again, there's no one else to blame. God has placed some limits here on the temptations that Satan can bring, and the reason is so that we will be able to bear it. Now, there are times when we think we can't. Okay, I can't do this anymore. Okay, but you can. With God's help. What did he say to Isaiah? You've got to wait for God to work out his plan. But what do we want? We live in the microwave age, and so we want instant answers to all of our problems or all of our trials, and it doesn't happen that way. And now what I want to do with you tonight is look at a story that you're probably very familiar with, and I think the best example of providence in the Bible is Joseph. And I want to show you what Joseph did and what God did for Joseph. And I want you to learn the lesson. You want God to work in your life. You want God to help you through this life. Then we've got to be like Joseph. We've got the same promise that Joseph had. Now look at the situation here. It says, now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children. What? He had 10 other sons. But who was his favorite? Joseph was, the son of his old age and the son of his favorite wife, Rachel, here. It says, because he was the son of his old age, also he made him a tunic of many colors. But when his brothers saw that his father loved him more than all of his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Now Joseph had a dream and he told it to his brothers and they hated him even the more. Now, one of the things that I want you to understand tonight is that we cannot always identify when God is working in our life. Now, when I look back later, I can say, well, God helped me through that situation. But when you're living it, it's not always that easy to see what God's plan might be for some situation. And so I want you to see that tonight. And I want you to see that God can use situations in our life, whether we do good or whether we do evil. Now look at this situation. What have you got here? Well, Joseph was loved more than his 10 brothers. Could he do anything about that? Was that Joseph's fault? That his father loved him more than he did his others? Now, is that fair? Or rot? No. But that's the way it was. And the result was what? Jealousy. Now let me ask you a question. Did God make Jacob love Joseph more than the other 10 sons? But here's another question. No, he didn't. But is this where this story is beginning? Is this where God wants Joseph to end up? As a shepherd out here in the desert? Or does he have a different plan for Joseph? Okay, now, in order to get Joseph from where he is to where God wants him to be, there's a journey here, okay? But there are a lot of things that happen. Some of them may be coincidental. Some of them may be God working here. But God is going to work out His plan. And I think the same thing with us. We can't always see the end of the thing from the beginning. But we have to trust that God's going to do what's right. Now, Jacob loved Joseph here, and the result of that was that there was great jealousy and hatred by his 10 brothers. So they could not even speak peaceably to Joseph. Now, is there a little bit of natural sibling rivalry? But have any of us ever got to the point where we would actually sell one of our brothers or sisters into slavery? You know, that's a little bit above and beyond here. The coat of many colors, what? It simply fuels the fire here. Jacob not only shows that he loves Jacob more, but he creates this coat that makes Joseph stand out even more from his other brothers, and so they hated him. And this is the hand of God, I think. Jacob made the first two choices, or the first three choices here. But God sent two dreams. And Joseph dreams that his brothers are going to fall down and worship him, and that even his mother and father will worship him. Now, what does that do to the brothers? Just makes them worse. How dare you say, you're the baby and we're going to fall down and worship you? That'll never happen. Okay, now let me ask you a question. Do we want to be loved? Do we want to be liked? And what group of people are most important to us? Do you want to be loved or liked by your own family? Now, would this have been easy for Joseph to be hated by his brothers to the extent that he was? Now, here's another question. We don't have all the answers to all of these, but where did he get his faith? You know, he's known as a man of great faith. Where did that come from? Well, my personal opinion is that Jacob probably told him about some of his experiences. You know, Jacob saw the angels ascending and descending from heaven on a ladder. He had the presence of God with him through all of his suffering. And so maybe he shared that faith with his son here. Now, one of the things you need to realize in this story, there are only a couple of times that we're ever told what Joseph is thinking. Okay, the rest of the time, we just know what's going on by what's going on around him and what other people think. Okay, but I think we can draw some analogies. Now, again, we asked, how much would you have to hate your brother or your sister to sell them into slavery? Now again, I believe God has some work in this. I believe there's some providence here. That God has a plan, as we said. Is it God's plan for Joseph to stay exactly where he is at this moment as a shepherd boy? No. So what happens? Well, the older 10 boys are out taking care of the flock. Their father, Jacob, sends Joseph to go see how they're doing. Well, when Joseph gets there, they're not there where they're supposed to be. And he finds a man there who says they've moved to a different location. Why is that significant? Well, this new location is further away from their father and from their home camp. And so when they see Joseph coming, what's their intent? They say, okay, here's our chance to get rid of this dreamer, they call him. Their first intent was to kill him. And they were just going to dip his coat in blood and take it back to his father and say, is this your son's coat? Now, did God have a hand in that? We're not told, but they did put him into a pit, intending to kill him. Reuben, the oldest, was intending to come back and take him out of that, but along came what? A group of Midianite traders on their way to Egypt. And so the boys say, well, why kill him? We get nothing out of killing him here except getting rid of him. So they sold him into slavery. Again, how much do you have to hate someone to do that? But God has a plan. He also is sold to Potiphar. Now that's not a small matter. Because Joseph could have been sold to anyone. He's taken here as a young boy. Most people believe that he was somewhere in his teenage years at this time, and he's sold into slavery, but he's purchased by a landholder here who is in royalty with Egypt. And we know that because when he's put in prison, he's put into the Pharaoh's prison. So Potiphar here was a well-to-do man, very influential. Again, I believe that God had a part in all this. I believe God had a part in the flocks moving, and that the pit was not full of water where he would have been drowned, or that the Midianites just happened to come along at that particular time, and that he was sold to Potiphar. But did God make his brothers do what they did? Or did they have free choice? They did. And we'll prove that to you as we go on. Now, what is the temptation of Joseph with all this that's going on? What's happened to Joseph? Here he is, a free young man. He's allowed to go and come as he pleases. He's a shepherd boy. He's out running the hills. And suddenly what? He's probably in shackles, being taken off to a strange city, not knowing what's going to happen. Would there be a tendency to become sour on the world? Your own brothers have sold you into slavery. He's tried to do what's right. Does it pay? You know, at this moment, could he make a pretty good argument that doesn't seem to pay to do what's right? My own brother sold me into slavery. Here I'm trying to do right, and who cares? Could he become sullen and bitter? Why did God let this happen to me? If there's a God, why didn't he stop this? Okay, why didn't he? Why did he let this happen? Couldn't God stop all bad things from happening if he wanted to? But what would that mean? You know, that suicide bomber that wants to strap a bomb on and walk into a crowded restaurant and blow it up, does he have free choice like you do? So, which free choice is God going to stop, yours or his? See, we all have free choice and we all suffer the consequences. Now, God can overrule. God can make things come out, something good come out of even those bad choices that people make. But it's not God's fault what was happening here. It was the brothers who sold him into slavery. And yet, is there anything more humiliating than being treated as a slave? Suddenly, Joseph is going from being this free young man to what? Now he's cleaning up other people's messes. He's a domestic household slave. But what does he have? You know, he never lost his faith in God. At this moment in time, he has no one else in the world. But he still has God. And he trusted that God would help him. Now, we're not told that, but we see from the things that happened to Joseph that that was true. Now, he believed that though people change, God does not change. Now, can I control what other people do? Now, I can't control anybody but myself. And so I can't make people love me. I can't make people do right. I can't make them do anything they don't want to do. And Joseph, could he change his brothers? Could he go back and say, I'm sorry, I'll never wear my coat of many colors again? No, he couldn't change that. But what did he believe? He believed his enemies could bring him to his goal provided he did what God wanted him to do. Now think about those concepts. People have a tendency when things are not going well to blame God and to pull away from God. You're pulling away from your greatest source of comfort if you do that. Joseph never left God. How do we know that? Well, look at what happens. It says, the Lord was with Joseph. Now, would that be true if he didn't have any faith in God, if he didn't trust God, if he didn't believe in God and stay with God? God stayed with him because Joseph stayed with God. And what was the result? And he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. Now keep this in mind, because it's going to be a pattern here. What's the promise to us? All things are going to work for good. What would be the odds of a Jewish shepherd boy becoming the leader of a rich man's house in Egypt? But that's what happens here. What? The Lord is with Joseph, and what? He is a successful man. And why? Because it says that Potiphar saw that everything Joseph touched, God blessed. So what's the result then? Well, Joseph accepted his situation and adjusted to it. Do you think this is where he wanted to be? He's away from home. He doesn't know if his mother or dad are alive or well. He's not allowed to go home. He's not allowed to do anything a normal young man would be allowed to do. But what's he doing? He's becoming the best slave that he could be. There wasn't anything he could do about his circumstances, but what's the one thing he could control? His attitude. And so he did the best job that he could do at being a slave, and as a result of that, he was honored by God. Because as long as we stay with God, we'll be blessed by God. Now look at the result. So Joseph found favor in his sight, referring to Pharaoh. And he served him. Then he made him overseer of his house and all that he had, and he put under his authority. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. What's happened? This young Jewish shepherd boy is now what? The overseer of this powerful man's house, and he has control of everything. All Potiphar takes care of is what he eats. But when everything is going well, what's the danger? What happened to the children of Israel continually? They would be blessed by God, everything would be going well, and what? They forget about God. There's no indication that Joseph ever does that. But there's also another entity out there. When everything seems to be going well, you need to be aware. Because Satan's going to try to destroy our faith by bringing problems. We just read in the last verse that what? Joseph was a very handsome young man. So what's the temptation daily? Well, Potiphar's wife recognized what a handsome young man this was. And so it said every day she was asking him to commit adultery with her. Every day. Now, let me ask you another question. Is this where God wanted Joseph to remain? As overseer of Potiphar's house? Did God make Potiphar's wife do what she did? No. But is God going to use that? What happens? She finds him alone one day. It's just him and her in the house. Now put yourself in Joseph's shoes for just a moment. If he says no to this woman, or yes to this woman, is there a chance for advancement or to lose his position? In fact, what does happen when he says no? He's a long way from home. Is his mom and dad going to know what he's doing? He's a handsome young man, but he's not been allowed to marry or to have a normal family. So could he make all kinds of excuses why he should satisfy this woman's desires? But notice what he does. It says, he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. He has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in the house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Why did Joseph say no? Had Potiphar been good to him? Potiphar turned his entire household over to him. The only thing he'd kept back was his wife. Would it have been a sin against Potiphar's wife? Absolutely. Nobody else would know, but would Joseph know if he'd done wrong here? Would he have to carry that guilt with him? But most importantly, he said, it was a sin against God. Who's been with him through all of the things that he's been through up to this point in time? Who's blessed him at every step? Now if he goes against God and turns his back on God, who's going to be there? Joseph knew where his blessings were coming from. He said, I can't sin against God. And so he fled. Now, what's the providence of God? This scorned woman has some evidence. What is it? His coat's left behind. And so she takes that to Potiphar and says, this servant you brought in here, he tried to force me, and here's the evidence. I've got his coat. You think Potiphar believed her? But what's he going to do? He's got Joseph and his wife. So he puts Joseph in prison. Ever been accused of something you didn't do? Did you ever get punished when your brother did it or your sister did it? You know, how'd you feel? What's Joseph done up to this point? He's only done good. Look at all the what he did for Potiphar. He had taken over and brought great prosperity to Potiphar. He's only done good, and yet what? He ends up in prison. Now do you blame God? Do you give up on God? You say, why is God letting this happen to me? Look at what Joseph did. It says, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. That proves my point. If you turn away from God in that hour of need, what are you giving up? God's mercy. God's help. We got to turn to God in those hours of need, not go away from God. Joseph is at his lowest point here, and it says what? God's still with him. And he showed him mercy, and look, does it sound familiar here? He gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison, and the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hands all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper. Now, have you ever known of another prisoner that moved into prison and had total control and had the blessing of the keeper of the prison? What's again the odds of that happening? This Jewish shepherd boy who's now ended up in prison, but now he's ruling the prison. Why? We're not told what Joseph is thinking here, but we are told what everybody else is thinking, because what? Everybody else sees that everything that Joseph touches, everything that he's associated with, it prospers. And so the keeper of the prison turns the entire prison over to Joseph. Now, have you ever been unappreciated? Ever been forgotten? What happens? Again, is this where God wants Joseph to be? In prison. But remember, I told you Potiphar was important because Joseph is not in a normal prison here. He's in the Pharaoh's prison. And two of Pharaoh's trusted servants, the butler or the cupbearer, who is the one who would taste everything before Pharaoh would put it into his mouth, ends up in prison. And the baker as well here. They both have dreams. Joseph interprets the butler's dream and said, "You're going to be restored back to your position." The baker liked that answer, and so he said, "Tell me what's going to happen to me." And of course, the opposite was going to happen to the baker. He was going to be killed. But notice what Joseph says. This is one of the few times we know what he was thinking. "But remember me when it is well with you. Please show kindness to me and make mention of me to Pharaoh." Now, has it been easy on Joseph? Has this been a bed of roses that he's been going through? He says, "Please show me some kindness. Get me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I've done nothing here that I should be put into this dungeon." He said, "I don't deserve any of this. Please remember me." Now, he did a great favor to the butler. Do you think the butler remembered? 2 years later. How long is 2 years? You think Joseph sat there and every time the door opened, maybe the butler remembered today? Well, we want instant answers. God didn't promise that. He said, "You wait for God to work out His plan." 2 years later, what happens? Pharaoh has a dream, and the butler says, "Uh-oh, I remember somebody who told me my dreams one time, but it's been 2 years." Says, "Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. Then the chief butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, 'I remember my faults this day.'" Now, what happens? God has a plan. There was going to be this great famine. What? The Israelites have to be saved as a nation. Why? Because it's God's plan that through the seed of Abraham, Christ is going to come into the world. This all has been a part of God's plan for the salvation of you and I, that they survive as a nation. And Joseph had to go down there to Egypt in order to fulfill that plan. Because what does he do? He interprets the dream of Pharaoh and he tells Pharaoh, "You're going to have 7 years of plenty. The crops are going to be overflowing. And then you're going to have 7 years of famine, and they're going to be so bad that everyone's going to forget about all of those years of plenty." Pharaoh says, "You're the wisest man I know. I'm putting you over what? Have we heard it before? I'm going to put you over everything." Now, again, I ask you, what's the odds of a Jewish shepherd boy becoming the most powerful man in the most powerful nation in the world? Egypt was a world power. Joseph had total control of that. And what did he do? He collected up everything for 7 years. And then what did the world have to do? They came to Egypt. Have you ever seen the treasures of King Tut? Where do you think all that gold and silver and all those things came from? Who do you think made Egypt rich? It was Joseph. Because what? The world had to come and buy food from Egypt because that's the only place it was. And they brought their gold and their silver and all their precious things to get food. Now, one more thing. Now you're in control. You see Potiphar's wife walking down the street here. What are you going to do? You can have her head cut off if you want. No indication Joseph ever took revenge. Who else comes along? His brothers sold him into slavery. You know, he plays with them a little bit, but do they recognize him? Been a long time. Plus, in their wildest dreams, did they ever think that that teenage boy that they sold in slavery was now the most powerful man in the world? All because of God. What did Joseph say? Now, we know what he's thinking. God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, to save your lives by a great deliverance. Who did it? God did. They did it, but it was God working out His plan. He says, now it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and a lord of all of his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. God, Joseph saw what? The hand of God. And so he didn't want revenge on his brothers or on Potiphar's wife or any of those things. He was recognizing his position with God. Now, one more. When Jacob dies, the brothers are scared to death, thinking, now Joseph's going to take revenge on us. He's just been waiting for our father to die. Joseph said, do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? Now, look at this. But as for you, you meant evil against me. Did they have free choice? They meant it as evil, but what? But God meant it for good. Does that sound like Romans 8:28? God can make all things work for good. Even things we think are evil. Doesn't happen overnight, but God can work out His plan. It says, in order to bring this about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Why is all this happening? Because Israel had to be saved as a nation so that Christ could come through that. Now therefore do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. What's the lessons for us? You got to trust in God. No matter what happens, time and chance, Solomon says, happens to us all. Some things are just coincidental, some things are meant to be. But regardless of what it is or what's happening in our life, we have to believe that God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. We can't leave our greatest source of comfort. We've got to obey God. The more you're suffering, the more you've got to be faithful to God because Satan's trying to pull you away. He's trying to use that adversity. And don't judge God on what happens in one day. What? He said, wait and He'll give us the wings of an eagle so that we can overcome those problems. So we've got to be patient and we've got to learn to accept the things in life that we cannot change and make the best of it. God will help us. What's your situation tonight? Are you a child of God? How are you going to make it through this life without God? And if you are a child of God and you've not been as faithful and as dedicated as you need to be, then you're leaving your greatest source of comfort. It's not always easy. Look at all that Joseph went through. But was it worth it in the end? God makes all things work for good. If you're here tonight and you need to make your life right with God, we encourage you to come while we stand and sing.